Yeah. Whereas on Bank Street, those people mostly stayed in the businesses, but there were houses to intermingle with the businesses here.
Gotcha.
You ready?
I'm ready.
I thought we were going to walk. Are we not going to walk? So what's
We can walk. I just wanted to ask you a couple questions, and I do want to photograph you inside the church. So, actually, do you mind just taking a seat? Maybe, right.
Now you'll make my picture pretty.
Right in there, Peggy. Well, sit on this pew where you were, and kind of come towards me just a little bit. Yep, right there is good. Just have a seat, maybe right there. Yeah, let me see. Perfect. Yeah, that looks fantastic.
That's my favorite window back there with Dr. Those are my favorite people, Dr. Sturges.
Well, maybe let me do one here, and then I can do another one of you, maybe up there. That'll get the whole window in. Yes. I'll do another one for you of that window. I love this perspective, and I think it'll look great of you as well.
Are we recording first?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm just going to set this here. And then you can... So first, if you don't mind just telling me your name and where we are and maybe your association with the church here. Yeah, go ahead, Peggy.
My name is Peggy Allen Towns. I'm a local historian. And I... love all churches in the neighborhood.
I'm Dalen Woodall. I'm the senior pastor here at First Missionary Baptist Decatur and the 16th pastor in our 155-year history.
Wow. 16.
Yeah.
That's a pretty long tenure.
Yeah, historically. We've had three pastors who have had tenures that were a generation. We had two pastors to have tenures over 20 years, and our longest tenured pastor, Dr. Simon Robinson, was here for 25 years.
Wow. How long have you been here?
I've been here for 5 years today.
5 years today. Congratulations.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. And where are you from originally?
I'm originally from the small, and I say affectionately, barely existent town of Vincent, Alabama, which is in Shelby County. It's about 45 minutes southeast of Vincent. To be more precise, I'm from a small community called Cowsis. Okay. Which is outside of a small town of about 1,200 people.
Gotcha.
But Central Alabama.
Yep. Yeah. What brought you to Decatur?
I came to North Alabama initially because of a job I had in higher education. I've been preaching since I was 14 years old, and by the time I got here, I had been preaching for about 10 years or so, and I sensed that the call to preach early on in my life was also a call to pastor. And I've always had a deep sense of connection to the historic African American church tradition, and specifically the missionary Baptist tradition. So First Baptist and me were a natural fit. Came to the region, like I said, for a job and preaching in the region and developing connections with churches and ministerial colleagues in the region. It's just basically led First Baptist and I to come together about 5 years ago.
Okay. So did you grow up in the First Missionary Baptist tradition?
I grew up in the Missionary Baptist tradition. So okay. The First Missionary Baptist Church is usually a designation for the First Missionary Baptist Church in an area. So
gotcha.
You might have in an area several Missionary Baptist churches, but the first one that is established usually gets the designation First Missionary Baptist Church.
I see.
First Baptist is the oldest Missionary Baptist Church, African American Missionary Baptist Church, indicator. So that's why okay. we have that designation.
So is the Missionary Baptist like an African American denomination specifically?
The Missionary Baptist denomination is predominantly African American,
okay.
historically African American. Yes. The Missionary Baptist tradition and the National Baptist Convention, which is a convention that our church is a part of, splits from the Southern Baptist Convention over the issue of slavery and the Civil War. And so It's basically in the shadow of the Civil War that the black church begins to become more institutionalized. It pre-exists the Civil War. It exists in what's called the invisible institution before, when congregations of slaves at the time met in secret by rivers and under brush arbors and worshiped in secret. And then that church that had been an invisible institution before the end of the Civil War becomes a visible and more systemized institution after the Civil War. And the Missionary Baptist Church and the National Baptist Convention, that is kind of the focal point of the Missionary Baptist Church, comes into being.
Did that serve a specific purpose, you think? To become more, like, organized?
Absolutely, yeah. The function of the National Baptist Convention is so that churches can do collectively and collaboratively more together than they could do apart. You know, the ethos of the convention and the ethos of the local missionary Baptist church is the same. It's about pointing people to salvation in Christ and serving the community. And the African-American church tradition, Baptist and in other denominations, have always been about service to the community. The African-American church has always been historically the foundation and the heartbeat of the African-American community. Many of our colleges and educational institutions have their root system in the church, because the church always understood itself as never less than a sacred community, but always more. A sacred community, a community center, a college, a high school, an elementary school, a place where people were politically activated, a place where people developed a larger sense of their obligation to the people who lived in their community. And the National Baptist Convention is a bringing together and sort of a synthesizing of all of that under one organizational umbrella.
So have you always been interested in history? Do you think, like, the church and history, in the especially the African-American church, kind of, like, go hand in hand? Or is that something that you're personally interested in?
Yeah, I think it's George Saadiana who said, when people forget their history, they die. So much of our history contains the ethos of how my people came to be people in this country. And you cannot have an intellectually honest conversation about African-American history or American history without talking also about the African-American church tradition. So my interest in history and my interest in the history of my people and in the trajectory of my people coming to this country in the belly of slave ships and ascending through successive levels of personhood, all of that sort of interfaces together around the Black church.
That's awesome. So this, what we're kind of more specifically working on is a project about this particular neighborhood.
Okay.
And so if you wouldn't mind sharing with me just some of your thoughts about stepping into, you know, your role as a pastor here, specifically in an old town in this portion of Decatur, kind of what that means to you.
So considering what it means to me, I have to zoom out a bit and think about the history of this community, the history of this community that sort of came into its own or came of age as a community on the margins. A community of people who are not welcomed in other places in life in Decatur, a group of people who weren't welcome in other parts of the city, who weren't viewed as equals by people who lived in other parts of the city, who didn't have the resources and the economic and the political access and even the sense of personhood and citizenship of the other people in the city. But in spite of that, they were undeterred by that, and they carved out a city within a city. They carved out personhood from the fragments of personhood that they were allowed to enjoy. They carved out a sense of dignity and a sense of belonging in a community that was not giving them dignity or giving them a sense of belonging. So the story of this community and the story of this area of the city is that story. It's a story of resilience. It's a story about people who found a way. It's a story about people who were innovative and creative and community-minded and service-minded, who understood that, as Dr. King said, that we're all bound together in the garment of mutuality, who developed an economy by serving one another, who built strong churches by being concerned about the salvation of people and service of one another. That's the history of this area. It's a history that pre-exists me, and it's a history that pre-exists the people that are here now. But it's a history that we're all profoundly indebted to. And I think that our city, and I think that our state, and I think that the region would do well to reflect on how, as Isaac Newton said, if we see farther than the people who come before us, it's because we stand on the shoulders of giants. We stand on the shoulders of people who sacrificed. We stand on the shoulders of people who had to make a way. We stand on the shoulders of people who were thingified and marginalized, but still came forth from that experience, the cauldron of that experience, with dignity. And as a result of that, we're indebted. The city's indebted. The region's indebted. The families here are indebted. The community that's here is indebted. The organizations and entities that have been here from the beginning are indebted to maintaining and sustaining what was built here by that their service and their sacrifice.
Awesome. Okay, I have one other main question that I wanted to ask you about specifically. We've been coming here for, I guess I photographed Peggy about a year ago. So I've been kind of introduced to this portion of the community then and heard a lot of stories about the way Old Town kind of was from like maybe the early 1900s on to like, through the 60s and 70s, and how Vine Street was just like booming with businesses and all of the amazing people that have come from this community. And so when I look at it now, like, you know, honestly, I just see a lot of empty lots, and like, it seems like a fragment of what it probably was in its heyday. And so the only thing that I really like, I'm coming from an outside perspective, sure. Obviously, you know? So sure. Like when I come in and I'm walking around thinking about Old Town, what I see predominantly is churches of like, it seems like that's what's left, you know, predominantly. There's a neighborhood, there's people, the shops largely are gone. What remains, it seems like, are these churches, a lot of them. Tell me what you think about that, and maybe the role that the churches are playing in kind of, keeping the story going or tying this community together.
So I'll start with your sort of crystallization of the community.
Please do.
What remains is churches, right? That's not a somber or sullen note. If viewed properly, it's an incredibly optimistic note, because what remains is what we started with. What remains are the communities that built Old Town into what it was at its height. These churches were made of families and communities who loved God and who loved each other and had a sense of connectedness and indebtedness to the community. That's what remains. That legacy, that history, that heritage, that DNA of people who know how to come together and collaborate, who know how to serve and who know how to sacrifice. It's not a dearth of people that are willing to restore and renew and revive this community. The circumstances that are different now is what is needed. What was needed in the 19th century were for the people who were here because they didn't have access to the other areas of the city, because they didn't have access to the economics of the city, so they created their own economy. Because they didn't have access to the political machinery of the city, so they created their own sort of self-governing, autonomous political mechanism that was maybe not formal, but highly effective in terms of executing quote-unquote policy and reaching real goals and getting real change and real progress accomplished in the community, right? That's different now. It shouldn't be the posture of people. It shouldn't be the posture of the city. It shouldn't be the posture of people in the region to say, well, they built it before, let them build it again. But it should be their posture to say, the pillars that have held up for this community for so long are still there. How can we collaborate? How can we come together? How can we commemorate what the city has been historically? And how can we commit ourselves, our resources, our time, our talent, our attention to telling the story in such a way that doesn't turn Old Town into a museum, but helps it return to that height again? It's an error to say, you know, all this community is churches, because that's a fundamental category error in assuming that the churches and that the people that are here aren't valuable or that they aren't sufficient or that they don't have enough talent and ability to restore this community. That's not the truth. It is true that what's left of the churches, but what's also true is this community started with churches. This community built itself into something extraordinary and historic because of the efforts and energies of these churches and the people that are in these churches. And this community still has the potential and the genius to be something special. It's just going to require more. And there's a profound sense in every area of our society that things change, except when it comes to historic areas like this. Our sensibilities have changed as a culture. Our values have changed as a culture. Our economy's changed as a culture. Our businesses and our business infrastructures have changed. But people want to look at Old Town and say they don't get to be a part of a dynamic economy. They don't get to be a part of growth and change and redevelopment and renewal. They have to be relegated to their history. When the history of this place is dynamic, it is unique, it is special, it is extraordinary, and it's a testament and a tribute to all the people who made that the history of this city, this area.
Beautiful. Okay, so you're not from here. Do you think there's like an extra gravity that you feel like coming into a community with such strong like history and relevant, like important people that have come and events that have come from here?
The history of Old Town is my history. It's not the history of my relatives because I didn't grow up in this area, but it's the history of my people. And it's the history of people who served and who sacrificed so that my generation could enjoy the privileges and opportunities that we've been able to enjoy. So it is very much my history. And as a result of that, I'm indebted to the people, to the entities, to the organizations who made those sacrifices. I have a profound sense of indebtedness and a profound responsibility to be a good steward and a good custodian of their legacy. It's a really fractured view of history that says I'm only responsible to the people that I grew up with and the community that I grew up in and the people that I'm related to. Again, to quote Dr. King, we're all bound in a garment of mutuality. And what affects one of us affects all of us. I have a better quality of life and I have access to better opportunities. And my child, my son is able to live in a fundamentally different nation because of the sacrifices that were made by people in this community and people in communities like this all over the country. And that's profoundly important. And that's something that connects all of us. And that's something that's significant to all of us. So even though I'm not from here, these are my people. And even though I'm not from here, this is my history. And even though I'm not from here, I understand that I have an obligation to be a part of leading this community and helping this community become to reach the height of its potential again.
Is that kind of your perspective too, what you're writing? Because you came from outside.
What do you see happening in this specific community in the next decade or two? Like, what would you like to see?
I think what happens in this community in the next decade or two will be a function of us realizing that there's something here worth saving, worth renewing, and that if what is in Old Town is lost, part of the soul of this city will be lost. So we have to start there. Nothing gets saved, nothing gets conserved, nothing gets renewed, nothing gets, you know, the benefits of a contemporary cultural situation without people in that contemporary cultural situation realizing the significance of the thing that we're trying to conserve and renew. So optimistically, I'm optimistic that the people in this city and the people in the region will realize the vast resources here in terms of the history and the culture and the people that are here. That's worth saving and commemorating. Not only that, but that the people in the city and the people in the region will realize that there's just as much talent, there's just as much genius, there's just as much potential here as that there ever has been. And that we're responsible as citizens in this city for helping shape and cultivate and encourage and resource that talent and that genius so that it can reach its full potential. So everything is needed for this city and this part of the city to be everything it was at its height and to even reach a higher height, provided that we commit ourselves, provided that we see the significance in making the efforts and committing the energies to doing so.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was, I'm going to have to go back and listen to that a couple of times.
I hope something helpful is in
there's a lot of rich stuff in there. I'm going to have to listen to it a couple of times just to soak it in.
I hope that was
something. Let me get a couple shots, photographs of you right here. I have another spot I want to photograph you, but you look really good.
Is this so good? Is this, do I need to do anything with
lean forward with anything? Like with your elbow kind of on the pew in front of you.
Lean forward like this?
Yeah. You were just like that, and it looked really nice. Let me... Now turn your body slightly towards me.
Like so?
Yeah, like maybe just like shift your leg or hips like this way. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Very nice. Wonderful.
Okay.
All right. While you're here, Peggy, let me go ahead and ask you a couple questions. And
that's who's gonna get it right, by the way.
No. I enjoy hearing all these perspectives. Okay. I really just had one main question that I wanted to ask you. And let me think about how I wanted to phrase it. Actually, let's go back. I think right when we first started, I had asked you about your role in this particular church, and your history, like growing up here in this community and around the community. Okay. So to start with that, and then.
Okay, so I grew up in Decatur on Church Street. Our neighborhood was filled with people who were concerned about everyone as a whole. My interest now in our history is primarily because I believe that we should be keepers of our history. Marcus Garvey once said that people without knowledge of their history is like a tree without roots. So I think it's imperative for us to share with our youth, as well as others who may not know the rich history that we have here in our town. It's imperative that they know that urban removal just did not remove who we once were here. Because during segregation, this was us. Not only did this neighborhood provide worship experiences, but socially education, everything was right here in our neighborhood. So we had a stake here. It was only when urban removal moved many of the families out, as well as our school, our high school, the only accredited school in the town for Black students, was closed in providing an education for high school students. So when you make an effort to erase a neighborhood, you're taking the people out. There are now, what, maybe 3-4 generations who don't know about the Vine Street Business District, who don't know that our teachers looked like us and were our neighbors. They don't know that. They don't know that people like Little Richard came to Decatur and performed at the school. They aren't aware about, they read about the Scottsboro Boys Drum. They aren't aware that this church played a significant contribution to that, as well as King's Memorial. They're not aware of it. So I just think it's so important for us to share that history, not that we're angry about it, but to share our history and to let people know that we persevered. We played significant contributions to Decatur, not just Old Town, but the entire city. So I think it's important that that we share that knowledge with people. And my hopes is that they're inspired by it. I would like to see Vine Street filled with businesses again. But until that time, we will tell the story. And I think that it's our duty to tell that story, to tell the story about the business owners, to tell the story about the people who sat in these pews, to tell the stories. I was a paper girl. I had a paper route. To tell those stories, the bus came through these streets. To tell those stories, I think it's imperative that we do that, and that we educate not just the Black community, but all of Decatur needs to know our story. All of Alabama needs to know our story, because from being in Decatur, there was a landmark Supreme Court ruling with the Scottsboro Boys trial, because members of this church, members of King's Memorial, members of Morgan, Black people in Morgan County testified, yes, we are qualified to serve as jurors, and we know others who are as well. Not only that, during the Tommy Lee Hines trial, he made history as well. That's the first time a person has had a trial to have two changes of venue in the Alabama's history. So it's those stories, rather than, people look at Old Town. I'm proud of Old Town. I'm proud of who we are. I'm proud of the business people who had cleaners. I'm proud of Mr. Harris over there who had a radio shop. I'm proud of who we were. And I just think that that story needs to be told. My grandmother, she was the first African-American female preacher in this city, right here in this church. She was preaching probably from that podium, because at that time, women preachers were not permitted to go up into the pulpit. Reverend Campbell said, "Woman, come on up here and preach." So it's those stories that we need to share about who we are. We're not down so much, but we need to share our history so that our future generations can be inspired about who we are.
And if I could, can I?
Go ahead.
In August Wilson's play, Jim and the Ocean, there's a character named Aunt Esther. And everyone in the family and everyone in the community knows that Aunt Esther has a profound sense of wisdom, that Aunt Esther has insight that no one else has, that Aunt Esther has an ability to perceive things in the way that others can't. And as long as the people in the universe of this story have a connection with and communication with Aunt Esther, things go fairly well. And when that communication with, that willingness to listen to, that willingness to heed the wisdom of Aunt Esther goes away, things get perilously bad. And Aunt Esther, if you put those two words together, is a homophone of ancestor. And it's a commentary on the importance of knowing our history, the importance of knowing about the contributions of the people in our history, the importance of sensing the deep wisdom of people in our history, the importance of looking at the pioneering spirit of the people in our history, the willingness to overcome and persevere and come together. And like the people in that play, when our connection between us and the Aunt Esther or the ancestor is severed, we lose a great deal.
All the more reason why it's so important for us to tell the stories. Mm-hmm. We must tell our stories. And who can tell my story better than me?
That's right.
Yes, I agree 100%. Okay, so there's been a lot of relevant, historically relevant civil rights situations that have happened in Old Town. Do you think that there's something like in the DNA of this community that allowed that to happen, or that carries over from that, that is still here in the DNA of the people of this community, specifically relating to like civil rights?
The DNA that the coming together that we saw during the 1933,
yeah, I mean, just between
during the Scottsboro Boys,
and the Tommy Lee Hines. I mean,
yes.
Like those are like quite significant like things that have happened right here within like a mile of where we sit. Like
that blood still flows too through the residents of Decatur. Yes, we will come together should that need arise. Yes, I believe so. And it just takes, us recognizing the injustice and standing up. And it shouldn't be just the black community. It should be Decatur. When there is a wrong done, it should be us speaking up for what is morally right. In the Tommy Lee Hines tribe, there were a few white people. It was just not all blacks. But today in 2014, if there is an injustice done, it should, all of Decatur should be standing up for what is morally right. Not what they think or feel, but what is morally right according to the word of God. And when we do that, when we can come together as one, just as we saw with George Floyd, people of brown people, yellow people, white people, black people, all came together for a common goal because they actually saw somebody being choked the life out of. It shouldn't even come to that though, because we are all human beings. And we need to see each other as that. And I think that when we do, when you first came here, you were over here at the archive and just looked across the track. See, we have to be inclusive with our history if we're going to share it. It needs to be inclusive. We can sit at the train depot all day long and nobody points to Old Town, which is the oldest neighborhood in Decatur. How do I know? Well, it doesn't take a rocket scientist. Your oldest buildings that are still standing, guess where they are? Right here. The old bank building, what was that, Reverend Ragland? That was Old Town. That's a, it was gerrymandered into whatever it is now. If you go in there and look at their clock, guess what it says? Old Town. The Dancing Polk House, Old Town. McCartney, Old Town.
Railroad Station,
Old Town. But I think when we start looking at one another, and as the city in its totality, and yes, we have a unique history, we want to be included, but it just so happens to be our Black history. And we're proud of it. We're proud of it because we are a people of strength and determination and perseverance. We're proud of who we are. And we want to share that with our young people and with those who are here who don't know our history.
What would you like to see in Decatur and in this community in the future?
I just told you, I would love to see the businesses. I would love to see a comeback of all of those businesses, the professionals, the doctors, your lawyers, your dry cleaners, your all kinds of cafes, restaurants, the Elks Club. All of those were here. As a matter of fact, the NCO Club, from the soldiers who were, the Black soldiers who were at Corland Air Force Base, was right down the street. I would just like to see the neighborhood. First of all, I want us to know our history because I think that's first and foremost. We have to know who we are and the proud people that we are, where we came from. We must know that. And then I would like to see businesses, Doc, still around here. And I would like to see it more viable. These empty lots, I'd like to see buildings on them in the future. But again, most importantly, I want our history to be shared. That's what I want. I want for us to know our history. Now, Reverend Ragland, I don't know about you. What do you think?
You don't have to at all. There's nothing I can add.
Wonderful. Well, y'all made a lot of profound statements. Thank you very much. I really appreciate y'all sharing that with us.
Peggy, did you start high school at Lakeside?
Mm-hmm.
And then you graduated from Decatur High School?
So, how many years were you at Lakeside?
Went to Decatur High in 10th grade. We at Lakeside at that time, over it always has been, was junior high too.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. So we went over there in 7th grade.
Wow. So you almost finished at Lakeside.
Went over there in 7th grade and 10th grade and went to Decatur High.
Okay.
And Brother Dalen, this white community fought integration tooth and nail. They were not the Klan, but they were the White Citizens Council.
Yeah.
They fought it.
You know, in Harper Lee's controversial second book,
yeah,
Go Tell the Watchman, that's what we find out about our quote-unquote white knight, Atticus, is that he's a part of the White Citizens Council.
And that's a much more dangerous group
yeah.
than the Klan.
I hope I didn't ruin it for you.
That's but, in To Kill a Mockingbird. They say that?
That's in, so there's To Kill a Mockingbird, and then there was a second book called Go Set a Watchman.
Which came out like 5 years ago.
Right. And that was the big reveal, right? Atticus, who was the archetype of civility and who told Scout, you'll never understand a person until you put on their skin and walk around in the shoe. He's a part of a virulent white citizens council in Montgomery, had one of the larger ones in the Southeast. And they were, do you know about white citizens councils?
Probably? Yeah.
Okay. And so they were particularly virulent because they weren't so violent. They weren't perceived as like a public danger. And they were
suits, ties,
and they were so well integrated into society and the political establishment. Mm-hmm. It's not different than
it's the same thing now.
I was just about to say, it's not different than the alt-right and the alt-light, the respectable outward face of white supremacy.
Family man.
Yeah, absolutely. That's it. You know. Oh no.
You're going to Kate Solora so you can take a picture out by the cornerstone.
Oh, my heart stopped, dude.
Yeah.
A buddy of mine's in photography, and I was like, oh, no.
Well, fortunately, we're on
part. No, that's good.
That helped.
That's good.
I don't know why it does that.
Yeah. There was a plan around here.
Your business people.
Past
your bank owners. Past, yes.
There's a photo that...
Do you mind if I do a few more portraits of you?
If you Google it, you find out that the KKK in the 1920s, they were not your drifters and farmers. These were business, middle class, real estate people.
Yeah.
Right. And that eventually became the domain of the white citizens.
Yes.
Right.
And actually, there's a newspaper article, is it 1919, that lists the names. Wow.
Yeah. And there's a photo. I don't know where it was taken. There are two photos, actually. One of them is of black ladies working at a dry cleaner where the Klan would send their robes to get cleaned. So their wives would come and drop off.
There was a parade here. Over 2,000 people turned out with their children and wives for the Klan parade.
Wow.
In Albany, Decatur, Alabama.
Wow. And there, in the second photo, this one almost starts me to tears every time I see it. There are three black nurses that are carrying a gurney. And the guy on the gurney is in a Klan robe. He had been shot and injured at one of their functions or one of their rallies, and he's bleeding. And the people carrying him on the gurney are black women. I met George McGovern in Montgomery, and he talked about how, you know, he grew up during an era where it wasn't uncommon, you know, to have that racial attitude of white supremacy. And it wasn't until I think he was in the Air Force or one of the armed services. And he was a paratrooper, and they were up in basically the atmosphere getting ready to attempt to jump. And then he saw that the person packing his parachute, the person who literally had his life in his hands, was a black guy. And he said in that moment, he realized the fallacy of white supremacy. He said, here this man is, literally taking my life into his hands, packing my parachute. And I believe that he's less than me.
And your life depends on
him. And my life, he said, is completely absurd. And he said from that moment on, he began to think about life as jumpers and parachute packers. You know? And so,
I like smiling pictures.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I wanted to get you.
I'm not gonna show my grandmother any of these photos because she complains that I don't smile enough. She don't like it. She gets upset. You got all them teeth in your mouth. You just be proud of your picture. But that becomes the paradigm for the way he sort of thinks about, you know, society. And when you look at how, as Ms. Towns said and Dr. Rowland said, when you look at the close quarters that our ancestors, their parents, their grandparents, lived in with people who didn't think they were human beings.
But they raised their children.
That's right.
and you sort of look at their babies.
Right. You look at all of the perceived notions about African Americans And they're not borne out in the practicalities. So they say that we're subhuman and inhuman and uneducated, yet they leave their child rearing to us. They say that our diet is a jungle diet, you know, and that we're not refined and that we don't have refined palates and refined taste, and we cook their food.
And they have the recipes in the junior league.
That's right. That's right. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, so you look at the position that was sort of held and then how it just fell apart in terms of how they lived their actual life. And my grandmother, who's 80, you know, raised white people's kids for a living. And to this very day, you know, they would say, if I was going to bring someone home, I wanted to make sure Miss Sarah would like her, even before my mom did. She was such an integral part of their family. And yet, and still, she has a receipt from paying a poll tax.
Yeah, are we going to walk? Are you all going to come back?
Can I get one more photograph of you?
Oh, sure.
I want to do one kind of over here.
Yeah, you point, man, right, and we'll... you want to stop your recorder?
I better.
I'm already.